A clean conscience is the key to everything. It's the case for Lutheranism.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, talking about his presentation at the 2023 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
The absolute blessed forgiveness of sins gives me a clear conscience before God based upon Christ, not on me. Clear conscience over against the manifold cultural and ideological challenges that hit us from every side. So much of the difficulty that goes on today in the world, so much antagonism is driven by bad consciences trying to argue themselves into believing what their conscience knows is false. Join me in a great lineup of speakers for the Making the Case Conference this year in Chicago. I'll see you all there.
You can meet and hear President Matt Harrison making the case for the Lutheran option at this year's Making the Case Conference, June 16th and 17th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
I'm going to Mandalore so that I may be forgiven for my transgressions. This is the way.
There's something dangerous happening out there. And by the time it becomes big enough for you to act, it'll be too late.
Hang on, kid. This is the way.
That's an excerpt from season 3 of the Mandalorian television series. In its first season, it was a runaway success. The second season was equally successful. What about season 3? Any stumbles along the way? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Ted Geese joins us to review season 3 of the Mandalorian. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Give us a basic synopsis of this entire series, not only season 3, and just generally how it compares with the other seasons.
This show, it's a Disney Plus television show, live action. It fits in the wider Star Wars story after the events of Return of the Jedi. And I guess actually season 3 would be after the Book of Boba Fett TV show as well, but before The Force Awakens and the rest of the sequel trilogy. So it kind of fits right in there. This is about a bounty hunter, Mando, whose name is Din Djarin, and he's a Mandalorian, and he is kind of ended up with this foundling who people originally called Baby Yoda, was listed as the child, and we now know him as Grogu, and he looks like Yoda, but a younger version of that species of alien from this sci-fi universe. And this is the continuing saga of the Mandalorian, and maybe we'll talk more about what all that stuff means, I guess, along the way too, but that's what we get. So he basically decided that he wanted to protect the child in the first season. In the second season, he wanted to get Grogu to his people. But now he and Grogu are kind of together as a small clan, as it were, like a little family at this point. And this season sees him interacting with this character of Bo-Katan, who is played by Katie Sackhoff. And she also did the voice of the character of Bo-Katan, another Mandalorian from the Clone Wars cartoons and Star Wars Rebels cartoons that were kind of headed up by Dave Filoni with George Lucas. And this Mandalorian show is mostly under the watch of Jon Favreau, and then Dave Filoni is kind of a part of it, but Kathleen Kennedy's involved in that, and George Lucas gets writing credits along the way too, and so this is where it all fits.
The first season was a huge hit, partly because people just didn't know what to expect, and they got something that they thought was a really great kind of chapter in the whole Star Wars saga. Second season, I think, was able to put lightning in a bottle one more time. What about the third one?
That's debatable. So it depends what you're coming to see The Mandalorian for. The last couple episodes, lots of action. So if you're just there for the action, you get a bunch of action at the end of the season. I think the first season worked well because there was this unfolding mystery and people kind of like a mystery. They want to see where things go. The second season had the spectacular return of the character of Luke Skywalker at the end, which people just absolutely loved. The third season, I think that it took time for the audience to figure out what was going on. Like, where is this story going exactly? It wasn't designed in such a way to allow for an unfolding mystery where there were enough clues for you to kind of get it. So that, I think, might have been a problem for some people. It didn't really become obvious as to what was going on. There's 8 episodes in the season, and I think that it wasn't really until episode, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 before it really started to gel exactly what the whole season was about. So I think that's a bit of a, could be a problem, had been a problem for some people as they were watching it. One thing that kind of comes up over and over again about these shows is that it has this kind of familiar structure that people find in video games. Now, video games are very popular, so maybe that's why they do this, but where there's lots of little side quests and lots of little kind of, we set this up, you go do this to get this, to talk to this person, and then you go back to the main story, and it just kind of happens over and over again. So there's a kind of a quality to that that's maybe not the same as you're going to get in the cinematic Star Wars films, particularly the original 3 films and the prequel films. The sequel films kind of have that same sort of quality too. So this is kind of a new direction for Star Wars, and not everybody is keen with that kind of narrative style. So that kind of also maybe helps to obscure what the overall big story was. So we're going to have some spoilers as happens. We did wait just a little while for people to kind of get done catching up on it. So dear listener, if you are not caught up yet, we will spoil a couple things. But one of the things with this is that who the villain was of this season and where it was all going was kind of obscured at the beginning. And I think that had they kind of just shuffled some of the content of the season around a little bit, it would have given viewers enough of a heads up on where it was going. So for instance, the character of Moff Gideon, this is a repeating villain. He was the main villain in the first and second season. He's back again in this season. And they don't find out that he was basically arrested and taken away for trial at the end of the second season. And then they find a derelict ship floating in space that's been shot up. And that is the ship that was transporting him to trial. And they discover that he's missing. But that doesn't show up until way later in the season. And if they'd put that at the very beginning of the first episode, kind of before the credits came up, they could have set up everything with enough kind of dramatic direction for your audience to kind of really latch into things. And if I was involved in making the show, I would have recommended that just in order to kind of like prime the pump for the audience to know where everything was going.
So what's the basic story that's being told here, and what do we know now so far about the character of Mando?
Well, Mando ended up taking off his helmet a couple times, and he follows this Mandalorian way, the way, this is the way of the way kind of a thing. So he's part of a religious group that is maybe more strict and fundamental than other Mandalorians within their people. And one of the rules for the Mandalorian way is to not take off your helmet. And he took off his helmet because he was dying in the first season. But the only person who saw him was this droid, and he's not supposed to let anybody see him. And no living thing should see me. And the droid says, well, I'm not a living thing. I'm a droid, so I can see you, kind of a thing. So there was that. But then in the second season, he ended up having to take his helmet off again in order to kind of help Grogu. And then he also took it off again. So he's been taking his helmet off a lot. He didn't take his helmet off at all during this season. But by the end of the second season, the beginning of this season, it's set up that he has transgressed the way. And he needed to be redeemed. And the only way to be redeemed is to go to Mandalore and bathe in these waters by the forge, kind of a deal. And it's part of the religious nature of his character within this show. And but the thing is that the planet has been kind of decimated by the Empire, and it's inaccessible. And he says, well, I'm still going to go try to do it. So by going and doing that, he kind of is redeemed. This is kind of in a way like this is starting to border onto ideas that the Christian finds connected to baptism within Christianity. So, and I think people will kind of see some of this stuff in the course of this show if they're looking for it, if they're thinking about it. But like going back to the waters of your baptism, remembering that that's where you have your forgiveness. So in a way, him going to these waters helped him be again a follower of the way and a faithful person who's taken the creed of the Mandalore, because he's this foundling himself and has been adopted into the Mandalorian world. So this is part of the story. And then by the end of the whole season, it wraps back around to that. And you get some more baptism related things kind of through the whole entire season. You get an example of this baptism happening elsewhere, some other kind of a thing where there's this big monster. It's kind of a Leviathan kind of style monster. And then, of course, they show that at the actual waters where this happens on the planet of Mandalore, there's a monster under there too. There's this mythosaur. So this idea that this stuff's all kind of connected together. Within Christianity, you have like Leviathan, not exactly kind of connected specifically to baptism, except that, you know, it's often associated with the devil. And in baptism, especially for Lutherans, there's like a renunciation of the devil as part of baptism as well. So these things are kind of all percolating. And by the time you get to the very end of the whole entire show, and again, spoilers for those who are not watching it yet or haven't caught up completely, so this is your warning. By the end of it, Grogu is going to get baptized, basically. He's going to take the way. He's going to have water poured on him. But if you can't speak the words, then you need to have somebody stand up for you or kind of be the one to sign off on your baptism, right? To give permission for it to happen. And that's when Din Djarin says that he's not just going to consider Grogu to be his foundling apprentice, but he would adopt him to speak on his behalf so that he could take the way. So this is another kind of element that's pretty interesting and kind of connected to, like, if an infant is baptized in a Lutheran church, let's say, then the parents and the godparents, like the sponsors, would answer on behalf of the child. And then later in life, they can answer for themselves at the confirmation of their baptism. So this is kind of an interesting element to what you see. And that's part of this unfolding story. The other thing too, I guess, is the question of, and I alluded to this earlier, is what does it mean when the show is called The Mandalorian? So we've talked about it before, where the idea might be that Mando is, maybe he's not the Mandalorian. Maybe Grogu is the Mandalorian. And when he's going to take the way, his name, when he's adopted by Din Djarin, he becomes Din Grogu. So he even takes on this new name in that. So maybe he's the Mandalorian. Or looking at this whole season, maybe the Mandalorian might be more like the children of Israel or the Egyptian people or something like that, where the Mandalorian might be in reference to all of the people of Mandalore, all the diaspora, like this dispersed people. And in that way, they kind of maybe take on the flavor of being like the Jewish people of the Old Testament, because Mandalore is like destroyed by an empire and their temple is destroyed and they're scattered around the universe, as it were, and then they have to come back. So there's this sense that they're coming back from the diaspora. So this is maybe like the return of the Jewish people after the Babylonian captivity or something like that, that they have to come back and rebuild and rebuild the temple, rebuild their city, their nation, their planet, essentially. So this is all stuff that's kind of floating around in that. So maybe the Mandalorian is more than just the character of Mando. And I think that's important to keep in mind, because Mando, like this Din Djarin, seems to not be the main character of the show with his name on it. So particularly in this season, he seems to be kind of not the central character of the unfolding story.
You say that there are some puzzling things related to the Mandalorian way, this religious sect.
Yeah, so at one point I talked about Grogu and Din Djarin kind of being like a little family almost. Well, the character of Bo-Katan, who's kind of like a princess who's like could be the future leader of the Mandalorian people. It all kind of hinges around the artifact, the Darksaber, and who has it, and that person should be the one to lead the people, etc. She ends up kind of part of their little family unit. And as a result of this, she at one point kind of remembers back to when she took the way, and she kind of has a maybe a spiritual rebirth, sort of, I guess, perhaps. And she then decides that she's going to take the helmet and take the way again, where she wouldn't take her helmet off. And that all seems good, and that was kind of exciting to see that. I thought it was kind of an interesting part of the story. I think it's like episode 3, The Convert, is part of that. But the problem is that no sooner had she done that than within a couple of episodes, the character of the Armorer, who's sort of like a priest, I guess, in this whole, you know, Mandalorian cult kind of a deal, this religion that they have, she kind of gives Bo-Katan permission to take her helmet back off again, which would be a violation of the Mandalorian way, and caused Mando to have to go on his trek to try to have himself redeemed again, or to be set right within their creed. So she gives permission for Bo-Katan to take her helmet off so she can go out and find the other Mandalorians who don't care whether or not you wear a helmet or not. Like, they, for them, they're Mandalorians, but they're not as strict. So keeping in mind, like, that kind of, using it as an analogy, like that whole Jewish kind of end of things, you could have, like, Hasidic Jews that are much more specific about their religious observances and traditions. And then you could have, like, some of the more modern Jewish people that don't maybe follow all the kosher rules or all the clothing related rules or everything exactly in the same sort of way. So she gives permission to Bo-Katan to walk in both worlds in order to pull together all of these people that have been at odds with each other over the years so that they could collectively come back to the planet and start over again. It's kind of puzzling. It's like, so which is it? Is it important that you do these things or isn't it? And I think it sends a kind of a weird mixed message in terms of the whole thing. And it also kind of smacks of sort of like an ecumenicism that calls into question exactly the validity of the religion itself or anything that they're doing. Like, is it all adiaphora? Is it all wiggle room stuff or isn't it? And if it is all things you could change, then why are you doing it in the first place, I guess. I think that's a little puzzling in the grand scheme of things, and maybe this is something that I would find interesting or a thought that I would be curious about and other Lutherans might be curious about, but it may not be something that everybody finds as a peculiar puzzling thing.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing season 3 of the Mandalorian television series. There's a particularly bizarre episode he wants to discuss next.
This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, Kyle Mann of the Babylon Bee, San Francisco Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod President Matt Harrison, and others for the 2023 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, June 16th and 17th in Chicago. issuesetc.org.
Martin Luther tended to view the world through the three estates, the family, the church, and the state. The family provides the fundamental unit of society. In the church, God makes Christians, and in the state, he governs for the good of his people, his church. Well, the death and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ affects our life in all three of these estates, and that's the topic of the April issue of the Lutheran Witness. To learn more, visit cph.org/witness or visit witness.lcms.org. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, is looking for an English teacher with a master's degree for the 2023-24 school year. Edwardsville is 30 minutes from downtown St. Louis. The position would involve teaching upper-level, dual-credit English classes. For more information, send an email to Principal Jay Krause, J-A-Y-K-R-A-U-S-E, at melhs.org, jkrause@melhs.org.
Hi, this is Pastor Eric Lang of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Gresham, Oregon. One thing I've asked of the Lord, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in His temple. Mount Hood, Multnomah Falls, the Oregon coast. Oregon is beautiful, but nothing compares to the beauty of the Lord's house. If you are vacationing in the Portland area, please come join us at Redeemer Lutheran Church in Gresham, where the liturgy lives and God's people worship as one. For more information, go to wheretheliturgylives.org.
This summer will mark the fifth consecutive year that Concordia University Chicago has hosted the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. Some listeners have expressed concerns about Chicago crime and traffic. Well, Concordia University is in the Chicago suburb of River Forest, about 10 miles from downtown Chicago. On-campus dorm options are also available. The 2023 Making the Case conference is Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th. Learn more at issuesetc.org. or by giving us a call, 618-223-8385. We're reviewing the third season of the Mandalorian television series. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled A Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, you wanted to express some thoughts on a strange episode, Guns for Hire.
Yeah, this is an episode that really got a lot of people talking online. It has cameos in it by Jack Black and Lizzo. Jack Black plays kind of like the husband consort, I guess, of Lizzo's character, the Duchess, on this planet that has hired these Mandalorians. And Bo-Katan and Mando Din Djarin go to that planet to try to retrieve all of these guys. It is holiday special level, weird, goofy Star Wars. It seems like it sticks out like a sore thumb. A lot of it's pretty like awful. The writing is particularly terrible, mostly all the way through it. The acting is very poor. It's very glib and dumb. And it's kind of to the point where it almost loses you in the giant grand scheme of things. It seems so out of place. Christopher Lloyd is also in it, and he plays kind of this commissioner who's secretly trying to bring down their democratic utopia that they've created. And I guess, like, in the end, like, the one of the storyline points that kind of connects to it is this Captain Bombardier, played by Jack Black. He's a former Imperial officer of some kind, and he's gone through reprogramming, retraining through the government, the New Republic government. As a result, you know, like, he's supposed to be this good guy and everything's supposed to be good. It's also weird and schmaltzy. As the story continues to unfold, though, what you find is that Moff Gideon has spies, and he is working towards trying to bring back the Empire, etc. And I think that the whole entire episode of Guns for Hire could have been retrieved if in the next episode, the spies, which is plural, not singular, if Jack Black had been shown to be one of the spies. That would have been helpful. Because he's goofy and dumb in this episode, Guns for Hire. If in the episode, The Spies, if he's cold, hard, calculated, talking to Moff Gideon saying, hey, those Mandalorians that you sent to us, you know, or that these Mandalorians that we've been hiring to hang on to them over here, they've left to go back to Mandalore. That would have kind of saved it, because that would have meant that that reprogramming didn't really stick, and that he's just kind of playing a part of the goofy, dumb husband of Lizzo's character of the Duchess. That might have retrieved and helped, you know, like, rehabilitate that bonkers weird episode. This whole show has some setbacks, I guess, or some shortcomings this season in terms of narrative, pacing, how it tells you the information, what kind of order it kind of logically gives it to you so that it kind of builds towards something. That's something that I think would have been a big improvement.
Why do you think they did that?
Okay, so putting the best construction on it, by putting in cameos by Jack Black and Lizzo and Christopher Lloyd, you get people talking about that anyways. I imagine they wanted people to be talking about it in a positive way, not a negative way. But then there's that adage, you know, no publicity is bad publicity. So even bad publicity is good publicity, I guess. Adding this stuff in just kind of like helps get a lot of attention on your show. Now, a couple things where they could have added somebody in that would have got lots of attention on their show would have been if they'd added back in Gina Carano's character of Cara Dune. She was sadly missing from this. You remember she was like dismissed from Disney because she had some comments about Donald Trump that were not negative in nature. And her character of Cara Dune was obviously intended to be, there's this character of Captain Carson Teva who works for the New Republic. And that character, I think, was supposed to be Cara Dune's character. And she's a better actress than he is an actor. There's more, like, everything would have made more sense if she had been there in that spot, in that point, that position in the story. And that also would have garnered all sorts of online chatter, which would have been helpful for the show. The character of Boba Fett doesn't appear in the show at all. That would be a cameo that would have got a lot of attention online. And this Tamira Morrison, who plays the character from New Zealand, was even quoted as saying that, you know, he was waiting for the phone call to come and be a part of season three of The Mandalorian, and the phone call never came. So why you would skip over Carano and Morrison in favor of Jack Black, Lizzo, and Christopher Lloyd, I don't know. But in the end, I don't think having these guys in there did exactly what they wanted. It certainly did get a lot of attention, I suppose. And if attention is all you want, then I guess you'll get what you want. Attention is all you'll get. I think that's kind of an answer to it.
You also wanted to say a few things about episodes 7 and 8, the conclusion episodes, with about 3-4 minutes.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, now we're getting to the end again, more spoiler notices for you guys out there. But there's a couple things that are kind of peculiar about all of it. With Moff Gideon, Moff Gideon gets away in the first season. In the second season, Moff Gideon ends up taken away into custody. In this season, it pretty much looks like he's dead. Again, I know, like, Star Wars dead, I mean, the Emperor Palpatine came back from the dead. And part of his story is that there's all of these clones now of Moff Gideon. What they could have done in the course of the final fight or whatever with Moff Gideon is he could have said to them, listen, strike me down. I've got these caches of clones all over the universe. You can't get rid of me. And besides that, it's worse than you think, right? That would have gone a long way, but they didn't have any dialogue like that. So could Moff Gideon come back later? Probably. But they're doing this thing now where they get rid of villains. Like, you could string that villain along longer and kind of get more mileage out of that villain. We saw this in the Boba Fett show where Cad Bane was killed. That's a villain that they should have tried to keep around. This is something that's kind of an oddity. The other odd thing is the Darksaber gets destroyed at the end of the episode, like during the end of the episode. And that's a bit of a problem too, because so much they'd done so much to build up this Darksaber as a big important thing. Destroying it kind of gets into that sort of a Last Jedi kind of Kylo Ren, let the past die, kill it if you must kind of a thing. If they get rid of the Darksaber now, they don't have to worry about it in future Star Wars stuff. But again, they lose this really interesting item that is like a part of who should lead Mandalore. That's kind of gone. The other thing that you can see through the whole season and also in this last couple episodes is that what they're doing is they're trying to bridge now this into the prequel series. So The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. They're trying to bridge all of this. And I don't think anybody was asking for this all to get bridged together. And it kind of actually hollows out the story a bit. You don't need to have all of these plot points put in there that bridges all of it together. it kind of cheapens the whole Mandalorian story being its own story in the Star Wars universe. Now it's being wrestled into the overall story, and I think this is not a strength of the show. Also, there's that IG-88 droid. There's a couple interesting things with it through the show, but at the end, it's back as the Marshal of Nevarro. But again, it's just kind of tacked on at the end. They didn't really give you enough to feel like you were going from point A to point B to arrive at that. So these are some things, I don't know, notable about the way that the series ends. I guess the other thing is that, like each of these series, when it comes to an end, it's really kind of an end. Like you don't really need to make another season. I assume that there's going to be a season 4. There was announced a movie that'll be in the theaters, in theory, directed by Jon Favreau, that will kind of tie all of this stuff together in advance chronologically with The Force Awakens.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He is pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he teaches a course for Concordia Lutheran Theological Seminary titled The Lutheran Approach to Art, Media, and Film. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
Wednesday on Issues Etc., we'll have pastors Brian Wolfmiller and Brian Ketchelmeyer respond to your unanswered Bible questions. You can submit your questions via email, talkback@issuesetc.org, Facebook, facebook.com/issuesetc, Twitter, @issuesetc, or the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
You can meet and hear Lieutenant Colonel Alan West at the Share in the Miracle Dinner Thursday evening, May 4th, at the Regency Conference Center in O'Fallon, Illinois. Lieutenant Colonel West is a combat veteran and former U.S. Congressman. Proceeds from Share in the Miracle Dinner benefit Unity Lutheran School in East St. Louis. For more information, visit the Facebook page for Unity Lutheran School, East St. Louis. Share in the Miracle Dinner, Thursday evening, May 4th, at the Regency Conference Center in O'Fallon, Illinois.